We and most people of liberal religious bent have a long history of discomfort with the topic of evil. I think it's because a heart of our beliefs is that we want to believe that people are born good, or at least are born a blank slate with an even chance of turning good or bad. And so we try to deal with difficult concepts like sin by talking about them as missing the mark, which may be true and psychologically accurate, but somehow misses the weight of the idea. We see how in the rare hymn that does deal straight on with evil or sin, like Amazing Grace, we offer a little alternate lyric. If you don't want to say that you were ever a wretch, it suggests you might say, that saved a soul like me. And looking for a hymn about evil or sin or confession in our hymnal, well, there aren't any such sections in the topic listing in the back. Although we could have used turn back, forswear thy foolish ways, and we decided not to. Obviously, we do want to tackle and vanquish evil. But our hesitance to talk about it straight on is a barrier. And then there's Kafka's warning. This deep fantasy that we may have as liberals, I mean theological liberals, as people characterized by optimism and hope, this fantasy that evil will be vanquished, that we have the tools to do so, that we have left behind the great causes of evil, and so are prepared for a new era that is surely soon to come. In 1933, 30 men, they were men, signed the Humanist Manifesto. Many of them were Unitarians or Universalists. And it's a beautiful statement of humanist philosophy, still very rich and informative as a guide today. It includes several references to the world we would like to create and how to bring it about in a humanist way, having set aside supernaturalism and superstition as they saw it. It talks about the fact that the quest for the good life, this is a quote, is still the central task for mankind. I'm not changing the language, for mankind. Man, the signers wrote, is at last becoming aware that he alone is responsible for the realization of the world of his dreams. He alone is responsible. That he has within himself the power for its achievement. He must set intelligence and will to the task. They noted that the nature of the universe depicted by modern science makes unacceptable any supernatural or cosmic guarantees of human values. We must set ourselves to the task. And yet, there's not a lot in there about evil. The word doesn't appear, nor does sin. There's mention of some specific ills, the acquisitive and profit-motivated society that needed to be changed. But in the way that they speak about evil, the signers of the Humanist Manifesto are barely distinguishable from James Freeman Clark, who gave his 5 points of religious liberalism just 50 years earlier. Among them, the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of Jesus. But finally, the most important to our point today, Clark declared that one of our tenets, he was a Unitarian too, one of our tenets was the onward and upward progress of humankind forever. Now, when Clark said that this was inevitable, he wasn't quite followed 50 years later by the Humanist Manifesto authors. He didn't go quite as far as to say that it was inevitable. They didn't say, as he did, that the one fact which is written on nature and human life is the fact of progress, and this must be accepted as the purpose of their creator, of our creator. But the silence of the manifesto about evil, its lack of vocal acknowledgement of the challenges that human nature poses to anyone who wants to make this world better, that silence speaks. It shouts. Because, again, I remind you, it was signed in 1933. Within 5 years of its writing, the depths of human depravity were beginning to be evident in Europe. Within 12 years, we humans, without any supernatural assistance, had created global war and one nation formerly seen as a pinnacle of humanist achievement, had systematically slaughtered 11 million people. That might give one pause. Here's a folktale that I think is a little instructive about how we religious liberals tend to deal with evil and how we might change it. It comes from the Kashmir. And it's called The Lost Peasant. There's a little interesting city person versus country person stereotyping in this story. In this story, 10 are close to their village. They are weeping because they think one of their number has been lost. Each counts in turn. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And they have lost someone in the quick walk from their village. And as they're weeping there, a townsman comes along and says, "What's the matter? Why are you all weeping and moaning?" And they tell him, "There were 10 of us, but now there are only 9 we've counted." Well, the townsman sees the problem immediately and tells them, "Why doesn't each of you take off your skull cap, take off your kopi, and count those?" So they all put them in the middle and they count them. 10! There are 10! Okay, I guess we're all found. And they put their hats back on and are comforted, but they still don't understand. A variation of this tale appears in many cultures, from England to Sri Lanka, not always pitting city against country. But given the title by folklorists, this category, fools cannot count themselves. I think this is the challenge being presented to us if we are to recognize evil. Can we count ourselves? Having set aside beliefs like evil is incarnate in one supernatural being, like evil is a force from beyond that comes upon us, possesses us, can we then count ourselves so that we do have the language to speak of the most important challenges facing us? Kafka was a master of paradoxical wisdom, and he saw the dream of destroying evil as a reflection of the sense of despair which comes from loss of faith, as if it is our surrender of these supernatural ways of thinking that have created the problem. In an issue devoted to evil, in the magazine Parabola, a reader writes in Maternal Imprinting, "Each of us enters this world innocent, trusting, and full of potential for good. Harmful antisocial behavior or evil deeds, he uses quotes, are merely a reflection of an upbringing deprived of nurturing and security, and an early life full of fear, harsh judgment, and neglect. Classic 20th century thinking, and yes, no doubt that creates an evil way of thinking, but what do we call raising a child with neglect and fear, harsh judgment, and lack of security and nurture, if not evil? Like the reassuring phrase that many adolescents hit upon as they begin to think about morality, people are good, it's society that's bad. This reader contribution begs the question, we are society. And we have to be wiser than the Kashmiri peasants and count ourselves if we're going to tackle the evil that arises among us. This is why the phrase came to mind that we printed in the Order of Service from the movie The Usual Suspects, that maybe the best trick the devil ever pulled was convincing us that he doesn't exist. I don't mean that literally, of course. I don't mean to assert that the devil does exist, but bear with me a moment. Let's think of this in evolutionary terms. Let's imagine evil as something alive or quasi-alive, like a virus. It doesn't have a will, it doesn't have an intention. It's geared towards survival, if survival is possible. Now, wouldn't this be a terrific adaptation for the virus known as evil? First, reside in myths of evil creatures, demons and malign fairies and Satan himself. Let people spend generations warning each other against those tangible forces of evil. And then let those beliefs fade so that people no longer believe in Satan and his demons. Having imagined evil as a quality of such creatures, people will now think that because the devil does not exist after all, neither does evil. And so you, evil, the virus, thrive undetected. That would be a masterful stroke of evolutionary success. I think maybe that is how evil survives in the minds and conceptions of Unitarian Universalists. Now, we do know evil exists. We fret about its manifestations. We talk about them and work against them and worry about them. From officials who rip children away from their families, to terrorist bombs shattering happy street festivals, to worldwide apathy about the climate disaster. But we still hesitate to call all this by its names of evil and sin. And that suggests that we, in some way, are playing its evolutionary game, helping it to thrive undetected. We know that evil springs from humanity, but we still externalize it. We used to say it was in demons and other supernatural beings, and now we say it's in those other people. A mystery beyond human understanding. I counted, and there are only 9 of us. Fools cannot count themselves, but we can. And we know, when we reflect honestly, that as grim as these words are, evil and sin are in us, each of us. They emerge in subtle ways. Callousness, the surrender to the desire to be approved by our peers, an ability to compartmentalize our moral selves from the part of us that's just getting on with our day or just doing our jobs, the reluctance to rock the boat, not my problemism. Apathy, or in an incident that rocked our own denomination this week, when our official magazine printed an article extremely hurtful to transgender and non-binary Unitarian Universalists and beyond. Just a refusal to listen and learn. These forms of evil, they don't carry a pitchfork. They don't wear horns. They grow from our very ordinary qualities, quietly, until unchecked and stronger, they show their bite. One of the most chilling stories for me in the news recently has been a little anecdote of the crying of a room full of babies and children whose parents had been taken away at a detention center. And the was to joke to his co-workers, to joke about, saying in Spanish, no less, "We've got an orchestra here," about crying, panicked children. He's probably a regular guy. He's probably capable of great tenderness. He probably goes home to children he loves every night and genuinely adores them and gives them what they need. How could he be so cruel? Well, how can we hear it, this story, and not take to the streets, refusing to rest or be quiet until this situation is brought to an end? Is our inaction so different from his joking? Is his joking so different from the actual turning of the key on the cages into which these children were then put? The old myths say, yes, evil is out there in a supernatural being. And the new myths say, yes, evil is out there in other people. We need a clearer vision that says, all of these are differences in degree, not in kind. That we must guard against the evil within every human heart, beginning with our own, or we will keep perpetuating it and tolerating it. I'm a religious liberal. I'm hopelessly optimistic. A humanist manifesto, I believe we have it in ourselves, if not to bring about the world of our dreams, in their words, then to keep bringing it closer. If not to end evil for all time, then to keep on combating it, maybe a little better with each generation. Maybe a bigger step forward for each time we slide back. But we can't fight what we can't see. We can't perceive what we don't name. If there's anything that we celebrate as Unitarian Universalists, if there is anything in which we take pride, it is our ability, our commitment to perceive reality as it is. We could not do better than to practice this skill upon the evil in our world and in ourselves.